line, what we call now Habakkuk 2:3. It's, in Yahweh's prophetic testimony, there are neither chapters nor verses. It's just a continuous presentation of information, which is important for you to realize, because through this presentation, and we're returning now to Chabaouk to discuss the single most important prophecy ever shared with humankind. And that is that Paul, a man named Shaul, who changed his name to Paul, would mislead Gentiles, claiming to speak for God, arrogantly claiming authority that he did not have, to mislead people, that he would be the ultimate plague of death. Yahweh says that, that for the most part he's been quiet as to false witnesses, because the world's full of them. But Paul is so egregious that he had to speak out against him. And clearly, Paul's the most influential man who's ever lived. More people have been beguiled by Paul's letters than have been misled by anyone in human history. And so after saying, expect him, masculine singular, in this regard, because indeed he, masculine singular, will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering, God says, pay attention. He, masculine singular, will be puffed up with false pride. His head will swell. He'll be haughty and arrogant. You cannot represent Yahweh if you're arrogant. Just impossible. There are no arrogant prophets with God. If someone is arrogant, like Paul was arrogant, like Muhammad was arrogant, they're not speaking for God. People that Yahweh uses almost universally say, yeah, come on, you got to find somebody better than me. Look at Moshe saying, I'm not qualified. I have a speech impediment. Come on, find someone. There's a lot of people more qualified than I am. Yirmiyah, the great prophet speaking to Gentiles on behalf of Yahweh, said, I'm way too young and inexperienced to do this. I mean, there's somebody, find somebody more qualified than I am. That's the attitude of those who speak for Yahweh. There is a humility. But not with Paul. Not with Muhammad. And so he said, expect him in this regard. He will absolutely come. Pay attention. The first clue will be a puffed up with false pride. If you look at Yahweh's two attests that are provided in Devarim, Deuteronomy 13 and 18, expressly written so that we individually would have the tools necessary to determine for certain whether or not someone was speaking for God or not. The first criterion in both of those tests is arrogance. If somebody is arrogant, they're not speaking for God. Discount everything they have to say. If somebody is like a pope and has all that, the regalia and the claim to power and authority, if they make such a claim, then disregard them. That's just the reality of it. If someone claims special authority, a special position, special commission, if they have an ego in this regard, then you can be certain they don't speak for God. So expect him in this regard. He will absolutely come. Pay attention. He'll be puffed up with false pride. His soul is not straightforward. It's not right in him. Only individuals have souls. God is not talking about Babylon here. He's not talking about the Chaldeans. He's not talking about some place like Sheol. He's talking about an individual, and that's the reason why his soul, and rather than just saying he's not right, he's not straightforward, which God clearly could have said, and it's true that Paul was not right, he was not straightforward. He mentions his soul, the very essence of the man, because his soul was possessed by Satan, because his soul was corrupt. And then there's the statement, after Yahweh was saying, okay, you need to pay attention to this guy. He is going to be arrogant. He's going to be presumptuous. He's going to deceive. And so, in that context, speaking against Paul, against Shaul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, God then tells us the antidote. So, you want to, he's not telling you to pay attention to Paul from the sense of learning from him. He's saying, pay attention, this person will be arrogant. And then he tells you what the antidote is. How did you go about avoiding being deceived, as all Christians are, by him? And that is, so then, he says, through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. Well, it's perfect. Rather than trusting the arrogant one, rather than believing that you're saved through your faith, God is saying, no. It is by your being willing to trust me, to rely on the plan that Yahweh himself has conceived. When you trust Yahweh, you're not arrogant. You know, I was talking with Glenn earlier in the program. We're talking about having firearms and having, you know, the Second Amendment and personal protection and all that sort of thing. And both of us agreed, okay, you know, guns are, you know, if you shoot them at targets, you know, they're kind of fun to shoot at targets. But neither of us have guns really for personal protection. We rely on Yahweh for our protection. That makes him the powerful one and us the reliant one. When you're reliant on someone, you don't have an ego. I didn't save myself. I didn't teach myself. Yahweh taught me through his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Yahweh saved me through his Moed Mikra, his invitations to meet with him and be called out of this world. When you're reliant on someone, they're the ones that you look up to as having power and authority and ability. It's that perspective forestalls arrogance. That perspective is what causes someone to say, boy, when you read somebody talking about how important they are, how important, but I, Paul, say, their words are, how aggressive they are in promoting their own mantra, where Paul says, if anybody presents even the slightest variation from what I'm telling you, let him be condemned forever. When you read that kind of stuff, you ought to shudder. It ought to make you enraged against that individual, because the proper perspective is just the opposite. It's through trusting and relying on Yahweh that we're vindicated. Yahweh, not Paul, comes up with the means to vindication. Yahweh, not Paul, is the source of life. And so, Yahweh is saying, that's the proper perspective. Not through the arrogance of a man, not through his circuitous reasoning, but instead through coming to know and trusting, coming to understand and rely upon Yahweh and what he is offering. That's how we are vindicated. That's how we live. Not upon a man, but upon God. That's the perfect antidote. And yet, this snake of a man, Paul, misquoted this to infer that Yahweh's means that he's provided to know him and to understand what he's offering, the very basis of trust and reliance, the entire basis of trust and reliance, Paul twisted this to state that Yahweh's Torah, his source of information that empowers trust and reliance, was completely nullified and that it could not save. Paul twisted this statement out of context, which was a condemnation of him and his arrogance and his preposterous schemes, to infer that God was incompetent, that he could not be relied upon. And when you annul the Torah, that's what you're saying, that God cannot be relied upon. And God is saying just the opposite. So then, through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. But what did Paul write? What did Paul write? Not once, but twice. In Galatians 3:11, in the midst of his initial assault against the Torah, Shaul misquotes this verse, takes it out of context. a very statement which is condemning him for mocking God, and removes it from its context, truncates it, all to promote a faith based upon a combination of ignorance and his personal mantra. And he wrote, "But because with regard to the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated or justified by God becomes evident, because those who are vindicated, justified, and righteous out of faith shall live." It's not what it says. And the conclusion that Paul assumed and stated prior to his truncated miscitation is wholly incongruous with the Iowa's statement. Now, folks, that's full stop at that point. When Paul said, "But because," these are Paul's words now, "but because with regard to the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated or justified by God becomes evident because." When Paul wrote that, when he says, God's Torah cannot vindicate. God's Torah, his teaching, cannot justify. God's Torah cannot make righteous. When Paul wrote that Yahweh's Torah, his introduction of who he is, what he's offering, what he wants, his guidance to humanity, his means of salvation, his path to a relationship, when Paul wrote that it was incapable of vindicating, at that very moment, anybody, everyone should have known that he was not speaking for that God, for the God who authored and inspired and who lived, literally, walked in the steps of the Torah. It should have been obvious. It's obvious now that you cannot demean, you cannot contradict, you cannot annul the Word of God and claim that you are speaking for God. But that's what this statement does, and it's unequivocal, it's irrefutable. And Christians know it, and that's why they say that the Torah was annulled, that Paul established the gospel of faith in grace as the means to salvation. They're not under the Torah anymore, they're under grace, all because of this statement by Paul. And you read Galatians 3:11. That uses this citation against Paul to justify Pauline doctrine. You would reject Pauline doctrine and thus Christianity. You'd reject the letter to the Galatians. You'd reject the Christian New Testament because it's 50% comprised of a man who clearly lied. And if you realize that Paul began this letter by saying that he was taught directly by God, that he is God's lone spokesperson to Gentiles, that he is an authorized apostle from God, that God chose him in the womb to speak for him, and that anyone that says anything different needs to be condemned, and then that same person who claims to speak for God, that he is God's appointed apostle to the world, then speaking of God's most important document, his Torah, says, with regard to the Torah, absolutely no one is vindicated, then if you're informed and you're rational, you'd have to say, well, that's preposterous. Now, is it possible that no one in the Torah was vindicated? Yes. Is it possible that a person can speak for the God who authored the Torah and claim that the Torah can't vindicate? No. I mean, the combination of those two things, folks, to claim that your plan comes from the God who authored the Torah, that you are a spokesperson for the God that authored the Torah, and that God's plan, as it's laid out in the Torah, is incompetent, makes you a fool of fools. And for someone believing them and looking at the Christian New Testament and reading it as if it's the Word of God, and you realize that this man condemned God's testimony and then said that he was God's witness, that that's nonsense, and you're going to put your faith in such nonsense? That's why this began by saying, God, you're withholding salvation. He has to withhold salvation because you can't save someone who is willing to put their faith into someone and something that is so obviously untrue. False hope. Pauline Christianity is nothing but a lie. And this statement proves it. Beyond that, the statement that Paul cited, rather than proving his point, nullified it. And it's an irrational claim. It doesn't prove his point. It doesn't make his point obvious. It nullifies his point. And if you're so stupid as to believe that Paul was inspired by God to nullify himself, to declare himself impotent and incompetent, then you deserve your fate. You're already dead. No hope for you. That's why I'm so opposed to the religion of Christianity. Everyone who believes Paul is going to die. Every single one. Everyone who supports Paul, who tries to vindicate Paul, who advocates Paul and misleads, they aren't going to die. They're going to spend their eternity with Paul in Sheol. And understand, this is really serious stuff. It's blatantly obvious that Paul lied. And Yahweh, in this prophecy, is exposing him, is condemning him, is warning us about him. And here to have Paul cite this very prophecy as the foundation, this is the opening salvo against the Torah, against Yahweh in Paul's letters. To have him cite the very prophecy that exposes him and condemns him by name. What more do you need? He's guilty of twisting Yahweh's Torah right here in his first letter as he begins his assault on the Torah. He does the same thing in his most famous letter, the one that is really the basis of Christianity. And I don't think there's any Christian that doesn't recognize that the single most important book of their New Testament is Paul's letter to the Romans. And there he says, "For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from belief to belief, as it has been written, but the righteous shall live by belief." He's pretending to quote this passage. Every Christian knows it's this passage. It doesn't say any such thing. Paul's a liar. Period. We'll move on in a moment. Moving on. We recognize that Shaul is Paul today, and Satan. We're deliberately taunting God. In fact, Satan has taunted God, really, from the beginning. You look at his most demonic religion, which would be Islam. Its mantra, the very suicide bomber saying, is Allah is greater. It's taunting God. Satan is saying, I'm greater than you are, Yahweh. Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater. And if you look at Islam, for example, Halal is Satan's first name. Halal, in the Torah prophets and Psalms and Yeshaya, we find twice that Satan, who is identified and associated with the corruption of Babylon, Babylon means, from Babel, means to corrupt in Hebrew, that Hasatan's actual name, the adversary is his title, Hasatan, the adversary, that his actual name is Halal. It's Halal bin Shakar. And in Islam, that which is considered pure and righteous is Halal. He's taunting God. In Christianity, you realize that God says that the title Lord is Satan's title, and what do you have Yahusha referred to as? The Lord. What do you have God called in Christianity? Not Yahweh, the Lord. It's taunting God. When Paul admitted to being insane, when Paul admitted to being vicious, to being deadly, to being perverted, which he does in his various letters and his testimony through Luke and Acts, he's taunting God. When Paul admitted to being demon-possessed, it's Satan and Paul taunting God. When Paul claims to speak for God and then says that the Torah is incapable of saving and then misquotes what Yahweh said, taking it out of context, where Yahweh said it's through trust and reliance and trust and reliance in his guidance that saves. And Paul says, no, no, it's the opposite. It proves that this proves that God cannot save. He's taunting God. Now, you are free to taunt God. He was free to taunt God. Satan is free to taunt God. Now, there's consequences, ultimately, for the spirit of Satan and for the soul of Paul. God's already told us that he's going to hold him accountable. But you're free to do so. It's just stupid to do so. And to say that the Torah can't save, that the Torah is mean-spirited, as Paul did, he began by calling Yahweh's original testimony pornographic. You know, you're throwing your bull right in God's face. Now, there are six specific details in this next prophetic statement from Yahweh, all of which implicate Shaul, Paul, 666 years before he incriminated himself. But one clue in particular removes any doubt about whom Yahweh is warning us about, because Yahweh identifies his foe by name. If you're a Christian, you should pay special attention to this. Moreover, because the intoxicating wine and inebriating spirit of the man, the geber, the individual human being, of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, is high-minded as a moral failure, he will not rest. He will not find peace nor live. Whomever is open to the broad path associated with Shaul, he and his soul are like the plague of death. And so those who are brought together by him, accepting him, will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all of the people from different races and nations. Single most important statement within the single most important prophecy ever uttered by the Creator God of the universe to his creation. Chabaouk embraced this, Habakkuk 2:5. Full stop. You don't need to know anything more if you're a Christian. There's only one influential Shaul in human history. This man. You know, if you're saying, oh, that's not true, there was the Shaul, Saul of the, you know, during the days of the Philistines, and it was the rival to David, and and nice try, but context. This was written in the 600s BCE. Shaul, Saul, King Saul, had been dead for 400 years. This speaks of a man who will absolutely come in the distant future at the time that the Moed were being fulfilled. It says it specifically. Can't be that Saul, Shaul. And this is the only other one who bears that name, who had any influence on their time or world. That's it. Only one. But let's consider more about what this, the identity, beyond the fact that this Shaul, who is the plague of death, addressed Gentiles. And it's Gentiles who follow him, not Jews. You know, they're if you look at the original Shaul, which is, of course, he's completely eliminated because he'd been dead for 400 years, and this speaks about a person that's going to come in the distant future. He rallied Jews. It was Yehudim, Israelites, who followed him. He didn't seek a following and didn't have a following amongst Gentiles. One of the things that's unique about Jews is that they do not seek a following amongst Gentiles. Rabbis don't seek followings amongst Gentiles. Benjamin Netanyahu is not trying to encourage other countries to join, to unite with Israel and to follow him and to join in his Likud party. He's not doing that. Israel has never had Gentiles gather together unto them. Paul did. And not only did Paul do this, it's the single most telling aspect of his claim, that he claims that you know, everybody else, the disciples, they have the rights to the Jews, but that he alone had exclusive rights to the Gentiles. And this is exactly what this is saying. And there's only one. There's only one Shaul that claimed rights to the Gentiles, who influenced only Gentiles and gazillions of Gentiles, billions of them. And for those who would say, but you know, my King James Version says this doesn't say Shaul, it says Sheol. It's talking about the place, Sheol. Well, Sheol is a place of separation. That's where you'd find Paul's soul, by the way, today. Then how in the hell do you deal with Geber and the beginning of this statement? Geber. Come on, folks. How do you deal with it? Geber. It means individual. It speaks of an individual person. Now, Paul was inebriating. There's no question about it. He was intoxicating. His letters have inebriated and intoxicated billions. And he was the man, the Geber, an individual human being, a bagad, of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, of adulterous and offensive behavior, of handing people over to the influence and control of another without justification through trickery and deceit. If you were to define Galatians and Romans, Paul's two, his initial letter and his most famous letter, bagad would be the perfect Hebrew term to describe it. Deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal. Deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal says that you're a traitor to the very person that you've pledged allegiance. He claims that he's speaking for Yahweh, and yet he's speaking against him, working against him. He pledges that he's, you know, part of this covenant, and yet he's wholly deceptive in his presentation of it. Offensive through trickery and deceit. Paul claimed to be a really smart man. He presented himself as the most important, the smartest dude, that no one could debate with him, that it was, that his words were more important than God's words. He was a high-minded moral failure. Moral failure, he claimed that he was sexually perverted because of the Torah. He admitted to being murderous, to being ruthless. He was a high-minded moral failure, arrogant and yet presumptive, meritless. Now, this is key. He says, he will not find peace nor live whoever is open to the broad path associated with Shaul. That means there are no Christians in heaven. No reconciliation for anyone through faith in the gospel of grace. that the basis of the Christian New Testament, Paul's letters, is not only a broad path, and there is no more broad path than Paul's letters. In fact, Yoshe, in his condemnation of Paul on the Sermon on the Mount, speaks of the broad path and says that there is no life in it. It leads to destruction and death. He was citing this passage. He was referencing this passage. Christianity has plagued everyone who believes Paul. 100% of those who read Paul's letters and believe him, have put their faith in Paul's letters, are dead. 100% of those who have promoted Paul's letters and have influenced others to believe Paul, their souls continue to exist but in Sheol, separated from God. And what Christians know is hell. Paul and his letters are the plague of death. Deadly. Diseased, corrupted, malignant, because it's treacherous betrayal. God names him by name, calls him Shaul, talks about his open and broad path, his improper way, tells us that he's treacherous, that he's betrayed the very Creator God of the universe. That would be Christians with the Christian New Testament, which he wrote. Accepting him, which they do, they will never be satisfied. Most every Gentile will gather together unto him, all the people from different races and nations. Hello, Kirk. What do you think?
Good morning. Well, I think it's sad and tragic, but it's inevitable. I mean, I called because as you were talking, I remembered a couple of days ago. I don't watch religious television, but I did tune in on one just for a minute. Well, for a few minutes, and it was Jimmy Swaggart, and he Yeah, I know. He had received a 300-page expose on Paul, and he said he was with. He had a little desk with a bunch of preachers with him, and he went on to say that, you know, I received this thing, and of course I didn't read it, and then he said, and he called the people who would write such a thing. And attacked Paul. He said they were stupid. He said everyone knows that different apostles and different prophets have different skills or different gifts, as he calls it, because that's Pentecostal, you know, it's all about gifts and gifts of the tongue and so forth.
Of course, there's no prophet has a gift. No prophet. No, I mean, prophecy is not a gift. I mean, no prophet, none of Yahweh's prophets ever had a gift, okay?
No, it's a quote.
But Paul wrote about the gifts of the Spirit, so that's Pauline Christianity, so he's buying Paul's lie.
So as this show is attacking Paul and destroying him with God's own words, he won't even read it just to find out. So I mean,
By the way, he couldn't read it.
Why?
He can't read it. It's why, you know, there hasn't been a single person that has read Questioning Paul who hasn't walked away saying that, all right, Galatians and Paul are false. And the only one person who, and it's their own personal ego, who was critical of the first version of Questioning Paul was because they viewed their skills at translating Greek to be superior to mine, which I probably would acknowledge. The first version of Questioning Paul, the translation, my translations were certainly better than any English Bible, but not perfect. They've been substantially improved in the most recent version. But this person wanted to prove that their translations were the world's best, and their argument was, okay, yeah, everything in Galatians is false, and that Galatians is obviously false, as is 2 Corinthians, but not 1 Corinthians, as is Ephesians, but not Romans, and it went on through as one of the Thessalonians was true, the other one was false. And so to try to exonerate Paul, and you say, okay, well, Paul makes the same exact claim in Romans. So if Romans is from Paul and Galatians is not, why does Romans say the same thing? And how are you going to exonerate Paul with Romans when it's as corrupt as Galatians? So no one who has read it has come out with remaining a Christian. 100% of those who have read Questioning Paul from beginning to end, it's not like 1,200 pages. The information is just so overwhelming and so irrefutable. The only thing you could do is to say, well, I'm going to completely disregard everything that God says, both Yahusha and Yahweh, and I'm going to choose Paul instead of them, and that's not a reasonable position. No one, thus far, not a single person has read Questioning Paul from beginning to end and remained a Christian. Not one. Swaggart couldn't do it either. Now, Swaggart is a really sick, perverted man. And here he's saying, you know, I've got this 300-page expose criticizing Paul, and what a terrible thing to do, and he won't, but he didn't even read it.
No. You know, I flashed on something. Remember when we talked about eye for eye and a tooth and that thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
If you read down a little bit further, Yahweh says that if a man has a bull and lets it loose and it's dangerous and it kills someone, then you kill the bull. And instantly it just says kill the bull. It doesn't say retrain the bull, catch the bull, kill the bull.
Right.
If he injures a person.
Right.
And then he goes on to say if the man knows that the bull is
dangerous,
then kill the bull and then turn around and kill the man.
Yeah.
Now, we know what the bull stands for. I don't think that was a big problem in the Promised Land. Bulls were running loose, killing everybody.
And nor did... And when you talk about bad in terms of an animal, you know, animals don't have a conscience. They don't have a moral capability. There's no such thing as a bad bull. So, obviously, what Jan was talking about is a false religious concept based upon Satan
and a man
promoting it.
Yes. And they'll kill it. Now, whether you kill them physically or you kill them with words, which is preferable.
Yes.
The thing is, because Yahweh kills a few of them off right away. He says, I thought that you're absolutely doing the right thing.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that perspective, Kirk. We are in agreement that the truth serves our interest, that we benefit from knowing. And we grow from understanding, and there's only one way to do it.